I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds. And I wrote it down this time. It's episode number 191. We're creeping ever so slowly towards 200, John.
I know. It's kind of crazy.
Are you going to get me something nice for our 200th anniversary? Like gold?
Is that what the 200 podcast anniversary is? Is it gold? Is that? Oh, okay. Well, then I guess I'm going to get you some gold then, Patrick. That's good. That is Patrick Hester. He is an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John.
Are you my podcast wife or am I your podcast wife?
That's a conversation best had off mic, I would say. my name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And Patrick, you know, before we introduce our guest, I do want to mention that.
That's right. Make him wait.
Yeah, that we just to talk about how long we've been doing it. When we emailed each other about someone wanting to run an ad on the show, and you had sent me like these ad rates that we were gonna charge, and like I looked through my Gmail, and that email that you sent me was from 2011.
Yep.
That was like 3 years ago. So that's yeah. But anyway, our guest today is Stephen Hood. Stephen Hood is the co-founder and CEO of Protagonist Labs. He's the creator of Storium, or one of the creators at least. Anyway, and he is formerly of Delicious and Blockboard. He ran a very successful Kickstarter for Storium just recently, and we are delighted to have him on the show today. Stephen, thank you for coming on today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Stephen and I have been friends on Twitter. I feel like I probably found you through either J.C. Hutchins or Chuck Wendig. I feel like you guys were chatting one day, and then we friended each other up. And Stephen and I just basically talk about Farscape on Twitter.
What else is there to talk about?
Yeah, because at the time I had made it like about a quarter of the way through season two, and I think I tweeted like, I'm not really digging Farscape. And Stephen, in all caps with multiple exclamation points, was like, you gotta keep going. It's just about to get good. You gotta, you know. And he was right. And I watched it, and I love Farscape. So now anytime I come up with like a Farscape story that I find like on io9 or tor.com, I always like tag Stephen.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a pretty much a super fan for Farscape. My love for it cannot be contained.
Yeah, I love Farscape.
Yeah.
And by the way, you mentioned two guys that I just got to have dinner with.
Ooh, oh yeah, that's right, at the Pikes Peak Writer Conference. So that was JC and well, JC is from that neck of the woods, right?
Yep.
That's cool. And then Chuck was he the guest of honor speaker?
He was one of the keynotes. Yes.
Very cool. Very cool. Those are two of my favorite people on the internet, J.C. Hutchins and Chuck Wendig. So that is, and they are involved with Storium, or both are involved with Storium, correct, Stephen?
That's correct.
So we are going to get, before
well,
we even
well,
get into
now,
that.
Hold on. Chuck was involved in Storium, but if this whole Stars Blackbirds thing takes off, he's going to be cashing those fat Stars royalty checks. He's going to be having lunch with George R. R. Martin in the HBO green room.
I have photos. I have incriminating photos. So we're safe. Storium is safe.
It's funny because at the conference he was telling me about the Blackbirds thing, but he's like, we can't really say anything publicly. We don't really know. And then as soon as he got back, it started breaking. And so he was able to talk about it. He was so excited.
It's incredible. I'm really excited for him. And those books are incredible. Mm. They're just some of my favorites. And it's going to make a fantastic show.
I agree. And, you know, and I have to actually go because by the time people listen to this, it's not going to be the case anymore. But I read Blackbirds. I haven't read the other two in the series yet. And I just saw today for the Kindle Daily deal, both books two and three are both the Kindle Daily deal today, which is going to do these listeners nothing because this episode will be airing 2 weeks after the fact. But I have to remember to go and buy them both right now because I haven't read I read the first one, but I haven't read the second.
Oh, you're in for a treat. You're in for a treat.
He's great. So it couldn't happen to a more deserving guy. So that is very cool. But let's, you know, because I know we're going to just talk a lot about Storium and all sorts of other stuff. So let's get into our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Stephen, do you have a pick ready? Oh, we'll go to Patrick first. Stephen, we do picks of the week, so you can pick a book, a movie, an album, anything you want. So think about that for a second while Patrick tells us his pick of the week.
Wow, John, you broke up big time.
Patrick, do you have one ready, or do I have to go first?
No, I was going to say you broke up really bad there, so I'll just go ahead and go. I'm going to pick a DVD that I saw, and this was one that a lot of people were telling me I had to watch, and I finally broke down and watched it. It's called We're the Millers. And it's Jennifer Aniston and Jason Sudeikis, I think is how it's pronounced. And it's about a guy who is a pot dealer. And he gets essentially mugged. And these kids take everything. They take all his money, all his pot money. They take all his pot, everything. And so now he's in trouble with his dealer. And his dealer's like, well, I tell you what, if you go down to Mexico and you bring up a shipment for me, we'll call it clean and I'll even pay you some money. And he gets the idea of doing this by hiring people to be his fake family, and because he sees like a family in a motorhome breaking the law essentially, and the cops just let him go, and he's like, oh, they just basically ignore families in motorhomes. So he hires all these people. He hires a stripper, Jennifer Aniston, to pretend to be his wife. He hires a homeless girl to be his daughter, and his neighbor kid to be his son. And they go off to Mexico to drive this motorhome full of pot back up to America, and hilarity ensues. And it's a rated R. It's definitely not, you know, for the kids or John, but it's definitely very, very funny. And I had a bunch of people telling me I should watch it, and so I finally did, and I enjoyed it. We're the Millers.
Cool.
I especially liked there is an end scene credit thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it shows them sitting in the motorhome, and it's like a scene that they're shooting, and the radio's on, and they say, oh, this is our favorite song. And it's the theme song from Friends.
Mm.
And the guy and the two kids start singing the song, and they're dancing and rocking out, and Jennifer Aniston is just sitting there cracking up. You can tell she's just having so much fun with them making fun of that. And when it's all over, she just looks at them, she's like, okay, yeah, that was good. That was good.
Cool. Cool. All right. Very good. Stephen, do you have your pick ready yet?
Yeah, I think I do. You know, the funny thing is I've spent the last 32 days under a massive rock called Kickstarter. So, like, I haven't done anything else, like, except maybe eat and sleep. So I haven't seen any movies recently or haven't had to read anything lately, haven't had a chance to. The one thing I managed to slip in over the last couple months is sort of random, and I'm way behind here. But it's the animated series Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is, I think that's like almost 4 years old by now, I think. So I'm just discovering because it's on Netflix. And I thought it was pretty great, actually, I have to say. Like, it's a little uneven, but it's pretty good. And it's in this weird sort of interim universe between the comics and the films, right? Because like there's the clear Robert Downey Jr. influence on the portrayal of Iron Man. And some of the other characters. But then there's, you know, Ant-Man's in it and Wasp, and, you know, there's villains that we haven't seen on the screen yet. And it's pretty well done, and it's pretty complex. And it has like a season, like the first season I just watched, it has a complete story arc. Like it's a serial end to end. And I just thought it was like kind of astoundingly good. And I wondered where the hell it came from and how I missed it. I guess I'm the only person probably who hasn't seen this, I'm assuming.
Yeah, both John and I have picked that in the past. And the sad thing is Marvel didn't like it and they didn't feel confident about it. So they canceled it and started a new one.
That is weak.
Yep.
Is the new one good?
No, I hear the new one is not good at all.
good work, guys.
because they wanted the cartoon to be more like the movie universe. So they did two seasons of the one that you're talking about. And I just finished the second season a couple months ago too. And the second season is just as good as the first. And, they canceled it and they started a new one. And all I know is that, IO9 wrote kind of a scathing review of the new, of like one of the recent episodes. And they were just like, there's a scene where Falcon's mom is like riding on something and saying Avengers moms assemble. Like that's a line from like one of the episodes.
Wow. Happy life day, Chewie.
Well, yeah. What they did was they got the writers of the Great Lakes Avengers to come forward and write some episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. That's too bad. I wish it was better. I'll probably check it out anyway, though.
Just as a side note, did either of you see like the internet rant of Avi Arad going after the new head of the Marvel Studios? Because some reporter did this write up on the Marvel movie platform and all the stuff, and completely did not give Avi any real credit. And he got pissed, and he's like, "No, there would be no movies if it wasn't for me. I was the one who did this, and I was the one who did that, and you left that out of your article, and blah, 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 blah."
I missed all that.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
You know, writers are pretty sensitive. It seems like people in the comics industry are maybe even a little more sensitive sometimes. They seem to go off on these rants quite a bit. That doesn't seem all that unusual.
Well,
but,
and there is a book out. It's called The History of the Marvel Universe, John. But unfortunately, it's already out of date. They have retconned it, and now Stan Lee in the new history is actually Jack Kirby.
Oh.
They're one person.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
And in the new history, DC doesn't actually exist. So.
Oh, that's interesting too. Wow. Who knew? I will back up Steven's pick. As Patrick said, he and I both have picked the Avengers Assemble Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon before. I will back up that pick because I think it's great. And it is. So if you have Netflix, both seasons are there. Totally worth watching. Couldn't recommend it more. So,
and what's your pick, John?
My pick is going to be, I'm reading Brandon Sanderson's Words of Radiance. I usually pick a book every three or four episodes, and Words of Radiance is 1,100 pages long, and I'm not even halfway through it yet, so I can't pick that one yet. So that is not my pick because I haven't finished yet, but so I'm going to pick some more music, and I've had Joe Satriani on the brain lately, so I'm actually picking the Chickenfoot albums, which are the albums that Joe Satriani did with Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony from Van Halen, and drums is the drummer on that on those two albums is Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and when that first album came out, I remember hearing it and being like, whatever, it's okay. And now I've been listening to him and I really dig it. There are some awesome songs on it and his guitar playing on it is great. I will say, I think Sammy Hagar is the most inconsistent songwriter that has ever lived. Because I think he's written some of my absolute favorite songs. Like, I mean, with some of the Van Halen era Sammy Hagar songs. That's a good song. It's not one of my favorites, but that's a good song. I would still there's like the 5150 album had Dreams and it had Summer Night, like such great rock songs, I think. But then on the same albums, there's like just turds, like total turds of songs. Like just
happened before.
Well, but the point is that the quality difference is so extreme. And even on these Chickenfoot albums, there's some absolute gems. And then there's some just kind of middle of the roads. And then there's just like a couple of like, boy, we got to edit this better, guys. You know, it's like, it all comes down to editing. It's like when you put that song and it's not that, I mean, maybe some people like, maybe the thing that I think is a turd is someone else's favorite, I guess, but he's so inconsistent. I think he's written some great songs and I think he's a really good singer, but like, oh boy, sometimes there are some duds. So there are a couple duds on those Chickenfoot albums. I will not recommend them wholeheartedly, more of three quarters heartedly possibly. But pick the good stuff out of it. There's some great tunes on it. It's great playing, worth it, but avoid the turds. Avoid the turds. That's going to be my motto from now on. Avoid the turds. So that is my pick this week. The two Chickenfoot albums, they're both up on Spotify. If you're a Spotify user like I am, they're both up there. So worth checking out. So that is our pick.
Very cool.
Let's get on to our main thing. So as Steven alluded to, he's just finishing up the Kickstarter, which just finished up the other day for Storium. And we actually talked about Storium a couple weeks ago with Michael R. Underwood because he was a backer of it, and like many people were. So, Stephen, maybe you can, you know, I think a lot of people in our community know about Storium at this point, but maybe you can, first off, just explain what it is. What are people backing, and what did the community universally back?
Right, yeah. So first of all, thanks for talking about Storium on the prior episode. That was pretty awesome. I listened in on that. I really appreciated it.
Oh, no problem.
So Storium is, we call it an online storytelling game. And what that means to us is that a game where you and your friends come up with, invent, and tell your own story online. And it works by essentially turning writing into a multiplayer game. It uses mechanics that are borrowed from a variety of game forms, including tabletop role-playing games, card games, interactive fiction, collaborative fiction, shared worlds, and even things from improv techniques. And they're all kind of put together into a blender, and we came up with a set of game mechanics that we think are fairly unique and create sort of an unusual game experience where you're essentially writing a story together, but you're doing it through the form of a game where you have things you can do. You have sort of currency, you know, points in the game. You have cards. You have things that make it fun and unpredictable and collaborative.
Now, you know, it's funny. It reminds me a little bit. We had, quite a long time ago, one of our guests was Ken Denmead, who is one of the editors for Geek Dad, which was formerly associated with Wired. It's on its own now. But he was telling us that because he was promoting Geek Dad book that he had just put out. And he had said, you know, what first writing that he ever did was a email-based Star Trek role-playing game where, you know, they would email and you know, something like that, you know, sort of the ancestor of something that Storium would be like.
Absolutely. I mean, play by post, it's often called, or play by email. That's definitely another inspiration for Storium. And we're not trying to replace or, you know, improve necessarily on any of these forms. They are on their own mature and loved ways of playing and of actually telling stories too, but we're taking inspiration from them and certain sort of pieces and combining them into something different. And our goal, frankly, is to grow the hobby. We want to help more people get into gaming, but also more people get into storytelling. I personally believe that storytelling is like a fundamental human trait. It's part of what makes us human. We've been doing it since the earliest days of civilization, if not earlier. You know, we're telling stories right now, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of how we express ourselves. It's creative talent everybody has. And I think not enough people recognize that or play with that ability on a daily basis in an intentional way. And that doesn't mean we're all novelists or poets or screenwriters. That's fine. But we all have an ability to tell stories. And so I'm hoping we're going to create a game that will get more people interested in writing and in expressing themselves and in sharing the stories that are in their heads. And if we're successful, that's going to also get more people into gaming, which is a wonderful, creative, fulfilling social hobby that I think not enough people get to enjoy.
You know, you're mentioning how storytelling, and I agree with you about storytelling being an important part of really just humanity, about how we do things. And it really does exist in so many different forms. We have, you know, you have comedians, for instance. A lot of comedians are storytellers. You
Absolutely.
Know, they're telling their stories, and the goal is to try to get some laughs in there. But really, when you think of the best comedians, or at least the best, you know, more modern day comedians. I mean, obviously, you go back to early sort of comedians where it's like a lot of one liners right in a row. But really, the great comedians of our day, and even going back to probably like the 70s and 80s, they were telling stories about things, and you sort of latch onto that story, and then the jokes kind of come as you know, through the story, and it's much more meaningful. Then you have songwriting. A lot of great songs are telling the story, and you know, I always look back about, and we had Sarah Monette on the last episode, and we found out that her and I have a lot of favorites in sort of the folk music world. And folk music, a lot of the roots are, you know, this storytelling thing of people trying to, so that they remembered things, you know, to move on. And music Absolutely. Was something that was helpful with that, because you can remember a tune. I mean, a lot of people do that when they're studying for tests. They become a little tunes to try to help them remember. But storytelling is in so many different things. And it's funny with gaming. I never, we have so many people on the show that are big gamers. And it's something that I never was into for some reason. But now with something like Storium, it's like, that could be – I wonder with – because it was so successful. The Kickstarter was so successful. It seemed to have hit a nerve with people. Now, obviously, you have some amazing creators involved with it. We mentioned Chuck Wendig. We mentioned J.C. Hutchins. We mentioned all – you know, there's so many people that are involved with it. So obviously, that helped, I'm sure. But I think it has to be more than that, though. It has to be the core idea of Storium had to really hit a nerve with people. And what is it you think that it is about it that really hit that nerve?
It's a great question. I mean, it does seem to have struck a nerve, and we're really excited about that. That's what we hoped would happen. And we put a lot of work into how we talked about Storium, right? Mm-hmm. The language that we use to describe it. And that has evolved a lot over the year and a half we've been working on this project, because language is important, right? The words you use to describe something set instantaneous expectations with people about what that thing is. So if I, you know, if I tell you about my game, the word that comes before the word game sets a lot of your expectations. Is it a card game? Is it a video game? Is it a tabletop game? Things like that. So we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what was the best way to describe this in a way that would open up opportunities instead of close them off, right? And so we actually don't call it a role-playing game, even though it has very, very strong elements of role-playing in it. And that's simply because there's a lot of people who don't really know what role-playing games are, and sadly are not really going to ever play them, I think. The world of role-playing is smaller than it should be. In a fair, just world, it would be much larger, I think, because it's an incredible pastime. It's an incredible form of expression and play. When you talk about storytelling, I think you really do tap into some universal interests, right? There's anyone can look at that word and see themselves in it. Mm-hmm. Whether you are a gamer, I mean, you play around the table with your friends, and those are stories you are telling. If you're playing, let's say, Dungeons & Dragons or a more recent work like Fate or Apocalypse World, these are very popular sort of narrative-oriented role-playing games today that are inspirations for Storium. When you play those games with your friends, you are telling stories, but they're often ephemeral. They're sort of gone once you leave the table and you have just the memory. But that is storytelling. Similarly, when you've got your Tumblr and you're writing whatever you're writing there, you know, those are stories as well. Whether you think of them or not, you are communicating to an audience, and you're trying to tell them something. If you're on Twitter, like, you're telling stories too. We have to relax the definition a little bit. And as soon as you do that, almost anybody can see an interest in storytelling, I think. When I was a kid, I had a light bright. This is one of my earliest memories. Do you remember light brights?
I do. I had a light bright. Yeah.
So for those who don't remember, it's like a pegboard mounted on top of a lamp. And then you had like these little colored pins you would put into the pegs and it would light up to create patterns. And I have this vague memory of being really young, playing with our light bright in the basement. And I don't remember what I built. I don't remember like what the shapes or colors were per se, but I remember telling myself a story that I was creating like a talisman, and its light was going to push back the evil ghosts that were in the walls of the basement, because the paneling was like that creepy knotty pine with all these eyeballs looking at you. Yep. So I was like this 4 or 5 year old kid, like creating magical charms or something. Stories are in everything. It's like human pattern matching. We look for them. So that's my theory, is that we brought to the table something that was described in a way that people saw themselves in it and wanted to play it. And that's incredibly exciting to me, because we're trying to create something that will hopefully appeal to a lot of people, folks who consider themselves writers and people who don't, people who consider themselves gamers and people who don't. And so far, the kind of reactions we're seeing, the kinds of folks that are involved, it's all over the map, and that's really exciting to me.
Yeah, well, because like I said, because I think because you as you said, you relaxed the definition of it. It's something where I'm interested in it and participating in it too, because obviously you could look at it as song, but you'd even mentioned something like Twitter. And I know I joked around in the beginning that I just talk about Farscape with you on Twitter, but when I post to Twitter or Facebook or something, it's stuff that I'm interested in. But it's not stuff that I'm interested in. It's stuff that I want people to associate with me. It's whether it's links to stuff about Farscape or the music stuff I like, or a lot of times I just, have tweets of funny stuff that my son said or funny stuff that one of my students at school said, because like that's who I am. So you're trying to communicate who you are as a person.
And so a marketing person would say that you're building your narrative. And then I would hit that person, but they're right.
but it's true. It's whether you want to get that markety about it, but it's true. And so when someone would come to your Twitter or my Twitter or Patrick's Twitter, you know, you can look down at the last 10 or 15 tweets or something, and you can hopefully get an idea of what this person is about. And is this somebody that I'd be interested in getting to know a little better?
And why are they ranting about?
Complete my latest tweets.
Yeah, as I say, why are they ranting about Ancient Aliens on the History Channel?
His last 72 tweets were all done in the past 15 minutes, and they're all about Ancient Aliens.
Yeah, Ancient Alien theorists do think that is the reason behind Twitter. So,
yeah. So I think. If you do broaden the definition of what storytelling is, I think it does, because you're right. What's the reason? There's a lot of people that are on Facebook. Like, everybody's mom is on Facebook at this point. You know, I work in education, so these are people that are on Facebook, and they just post stuff about whatever, the pictures of their kids and whatnot. But I think Twitter is different. Twitter is something where, not everybody's going to be on Twitter. Like, everyone's mom is not on Twitter. So why are we on Twitter?
I don't understand what Twitter is. What's Twitter?
Right. And not to get into a big conversation about Twitter, but really just to put it towards this storytelling thing, I think if you're on it, I think whether you're aware of it or not, it is this platform that we use to sort of tell stories about ourselves. Or about the things that we're interested in, because really, I think to be on something like Twitter, you have to be a certain kind of person that wants to express those things and wants to get feedback from people, that wants to find other people that are into the same kinds of things. So I mentioned how I came across meeting Steven on Twitter, because I was already friends with JC and Chuck. And then I saw Steven, and I'm like, well, this seems like a guy that I would want to know a little better. So I start following him, and now we know each other a little bit better. And then maybe you meet at a convention or something, and then all of a sudden you find these people that are your tribe, for lack of a better way. I know that's a kind of an overused term these days, but you know, we all want this connection. I think ultimately that's what storytelling does, is it brings people together and, you know, lets us feel a little less alone in the world. I know that's kind of corny, but I think that's why we do it. We want to feel a little less alone, feel a little more connected to people.
That's a really good point. I mean, stories are meant to be shared.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's an inherently social thing. Like a story that no one else reads sort of has never fulfilled its purpose.
Mm-hmm. Stories are meant to be shared once they've been heavily edited and gone through the critique group 3 to 7 times and had another editor go through it and then, you know, kind of like had some post-editing done and then a copy editor. And then you can absolutely share your story 10 years later.
You're gonna love Storying Game.
Hey, you know what? I used to write role-playing posts for World of Warcraft, and I would post them on Earth and Rings forums.
Nice.
So I know exactly what you... And what I would do is I would actually get other people involved by adding their characters to the story, and that would get them to jump in and add a little bit. And then, you know, I would add someone else, and then they would jump in and add a little bit. And before you know it, we had this very nice, long kind of RP story going with multiple people, multiple characters.
Cool.
And if you want me to license that World of Warcraft stuff to you, we just won't call Blizzard.
Oh, I'm sure they'll be cool with that.
Yeah, they're fine.
Well, Steven, you know, before we have to get going, you know, obviously the Kickstarter's done, funded, I'm sure beyond your wildest expectations. But what's next? You know, you'd mentioned before we started talking some of the things that you have planned for Storium that maybe you can tell our listeners about.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, the Kickstarter was fundamentally about helping us get to a public launch of Storium. We have a beta test today. We spent a year and a half building and testing with a few hundred people. And we launched that with the Kickstarter, and everybody who backed us could get into the beta test and actually play the game today. And it's very functionally complete. And the goal is of the Kickstarter is to raise the funds we need to take that beta to the finish line, if you will, which is to be able to release it to the public, finish the features and evolve the game mechanics based on more feedback, make it as good as it can be. Also to bring to Storium a library of worlds to play in. And that's all the authors you mentioned before. So we ended up funding 60 worlds. Each world is like a reusable play set for storytelling. And so it gives you the tools in the Storium game system, like playing cards, example characters, example scenes, tips and backstory about the world. And you can use those to tell a story in a specific setting or style or genre. And so we have more than 60 authors, in fact, creating worlds. Some of them are traditional gaming-oriented worlds, like sci-fi or fantasy or cyberpunk, let's say. We also have like an adaptation of Dracula. We have multiple Jane Austen sort of settings. We have romance stories. We have adaptation of 1001 Nights by Saladin Ahmed, for example. It's just a wonderful, deep, broad library of worlds, and that was one of the main goals also of the Kickstarter, was to fund those, and those will be available when we launch. And we're going to be spending the rest of the year really building this.
Now,
since
you're looking for feedback, now Chuck's world is a little overpowered, so I'm going to have to ask you to nerf that immediately. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, some of these worlds are going to be pretty fantastical. There's no doubt about it. We've got a world from Leonard Balsera, who's he's actually involved in Storium at the project level, but he's also a game designer. And he has a world that is about a future where people have gotten superpowers through gene hacking. And so you play cops, like specially equipped cops that are trying to take down these sort of special supervillains. And I mean, that's like one example. We have another example where you were pirates plying the seas on the edge of hell, you know, like we're literally like you can sail into hell. So, I mean, there's an incredible variety of stuff in here. There's a world set in the 1920s Harlem Renaissance where you get to play like bootleggers and gangsters and so forth by Maurice Brodus. So I'm really excited about it. We tried really hard to make sure that it was a broad library of worlds, because what we really want is for Storium to be welcoming to a wide variety of people.
I'm shocked that Maurice would have anything to do with a story that has anything whatsoever to do with alcohol. That's so uncharacteristic of him.
His world is going to be fantastic, actually. That's one of the ones I'm most excited about, because I think it's really interesting. But yeah, we're really hoping that Storium, that when you come to Storium, no matter who you are, you'll find something in this list of worlds that will inspire your imagination and hopefully get you to write. And that's what we're going to be spending the rest of the year doing, is making that possible. And there's a lot of work we have to do. We have over 1,000 pieces of feedback we've gotten through the Kickstarter, just through the beta users themselves. Like, there's a feedback button in the product. And so there's a huge amount of feedback for us to go through and take inspiration from. And we're going to be working on that full time for the rest of the year and launching hopefully in November. But also one more thing I want to say is that even though the Kickstarter is over, we're hoping to actually continue our crowdfunding soon, hopefully in the next week or so. We're building some infrastructure so that you could back us directly through our website and get instant access to the beta and some of the other rewards from the Kickstarter, probably not all of them. So keep an eye out for that. Hopefully by the time this goes up, that will be available if you just go to storium.com.
Excellent. Very good, Stephen. And then people can follow Storium on Twitter. Is it just @Storium?
@Storium, Storium.
Cool. And then if you want to follow Stephen himself on Twitter, just @STLHood, correct? Is that your Twitter?
That's right. STLHood, handle going back to my college days.
Yeah. And you could just bombard Stephen with questions about Farscape like I do. And so, Stephen, thank you for joining us today. For me this week, yeah, just go over to johnanilio.com. I always have some music up there, some new music and that kind of thing that you can listen to and download. You can follow me on Twitter @JohnAnilio. And Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
Oh, as I mentioned last week, I am doing two classes for Delve Writing, teaching Scrivener to writers. You have a couple of days left to get in on the free class, which is going to be on the 22nd of May. And then the paid class, which is the advanced class where we're going to talk about ebooks and stuff, is going to be on the 29th. And there's two prices for that. If you go to the Delve Writing website, you're going to pay like $45. If you go to my website and click the link, I've got a little sticky post up at the top there that shows it. You get it for like 15, I think. So it's a huge discount to sign up through my website versus theirs. And the other thing is that with that, I do have a deal with Literature and Latte, who are the creators behind Scrivener. And if you sign up for the class, I will be able to offer you a special code so you can purchase Scrivener at a discount, which is kind of awesome because, you know, they like me and they know me and they know that I do that stuff. Other than that, sfsignal.com for the Hugo-nominated podcast, Kirkish Reviews for my stuff on comics, and I did the month of posts in April over at atfmb.com, so, you know, go check that out.
Very good. Very good. All right, Stephen, thank you again for joining us. Appreciate it. And everyone,
thanks, guys.
You have a great week, everybody.
Thanks. It was fun.
What a frilling Yuts. Show that was.
Yuts. What the hezmana was that?
Gunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.